Goal for this year is to finish up Himitz Hashem on Chav Gimel Amid Beis, and perhaps if we have time to start on Chav Dalet Amid Aleph. So we're actually up to E Hachi, which is approximately 15 lines down from the top of the page. And let's just try to see how we can pick it up. We had a Shita of Rava in the name of Rav Sheshes, and the issue is whether or not he's allowed to be mashtin with tefillin. Now, again, there are two possibilities. There's tefillin, holding tefillin in his hands, or actually wearing the tefillin and being mashtin. Let's focus for the time being on the case of holding his tefillin in his hand when he's being mashtin. The Gemara had equated that with what's called a base hakise aroi. That means for the sake of being mashtin, of urinating, a person doesn't have to go to a set designated base hakise, which is called a base hakise kavua. He can go and be mashtin wherever he can be mashtin, wherever he finds a place. That's like a temporary base hakise. So then according to this Man D'Omar, which the Gemara is going to raise an objection to, it's only Beit Shammai who holds that you're not allowed to go into a Beis HaKise Kavua where while you're holding your tefillin. You have to put them in the crevices of the wall that faces Rishus HaRabim. Then certainly, we could assume that Beit Shammai would even prohibit holding the tefillin, or certainly being mashtin with you while you're wearing your tefillin, in a what we call a Beis HaKise Aroi. And Rava, in the name of Rav Sheshes, in the Braisa, in interpreting the Braisa, say that any Braisa that indicates an Isur, because again, let's keep in mind, this will be important for us, that the Lashon of the Braisa was that Mokum she'itarti l'cha, asarti l'cha b'mokum acher. In other words, the Braisa seem to indicate some sort of a heter which became asur. And according to Beit Shammai, clearly there's no room for this heter in a case of a Beis HaKise Kavua. So if the Braisa indicates a heter in a Beis HaKise Kavua, that can only reflect the Shita of Beis Hillel. So let's just quickly review what we saw on the top of Chav Gimel Amid Beis, so we could start where we're up to today. There are two brisos. The first brisa says, Lo yochaz odom til biyodo, etc., etc., lo yashtin bohemayim, clearly indicating an isur to be mashtin, to urinate while he is holding his tefillin. And if that be the case, if we're going to paskin like that brisa, then as Rava points out again in the name of Rav Sheshes, from now on we'll just call it Rav Sheshes, you'll understand, is we don't accept that brisa, because that brisa that indicates an isa to be mashtin with tefillin, that brisa reflects the Shita Beit Shammai. However, Beis Hillel would certainly permit what we call a Beis HaKise Aroi, which we said is urination, because if Beis Hillel, this is the Kavachom, the logic of Rav Sheshes, if Beis Hillel was matir in a Kise Kavua, a Beis HaKise Kavua, which means defecating, that means gedolim, and he's holding on to his tefillin, then certainly he would be matir in a Beis HaKise Aroi. And again, the logic here of holding on to your tefillin, as opposed to Beit Shammai, who says, place your tefillin in the crevices in the kosel, that faces Rishus HaRabim, is shmiras ha-tefillin. We don't want the tefillin to get lost, to get stolen, to get attacked by little animals. So Beis Hillel was mekil, and he allowed holding on to the tefillin, even in a Beis HaKise Kavua, where he goes in to defecate. So how much more so, says Rav Sheshes, would he be matir in a Beis HaKise Aroi, which means lahashtin. And yet this brisa that we saw says, lo yashtin b'emayim, that brisa could only be reflective of the Shita Beit Shammai, and we don't paskin like Beit Shammai, we paskin like Beis Hillel. And that leads the Gemara to the second brisa. And this is the Braisa that was really problematic for Rav Sheshes. The Braisa says, Tvarim sheitarti lucha kan, or sarti lucha kan. And the assumption is, Dvarim sheitarti lucha would reflect the shita of Beis Hillel, who is matir, holding on to tefillin in a Beis HaKisei kavua. When he goes into a permanent Beis HaKisei, which is a makom tsoa, and he's going there for purposes of defecation, still Beis Hillel say, hold on to your tefillin. You don't want to lose your tefillin. And we had all sorts of conditions that we discussed in the previous year about how he holds the tefillin, where he holds the tefillin, etc. But then it says, Asarti l'cha kan, which is a reference to Beis HaKisei Aroi. Here's a braisa that explicitly, reflecting the sheet of Beis Hillel, says that in a Beis HaKisei Aroi, it's asur. You're not allowed to be mashtin, holding on to your tefillin. And again, the Gemara proves that that braisa could not possibly be reflective of Beit Shammai, because the braisa says, Mokam sheitarti l'cha kan, meaning that there was a heter of holding on to your tefillin in Beis HaKisei Kavua, that could not possibly reflect Beit Shammai. So if by proselytization the author of that braisa is Beis Hillel, then we see clearly against Rav Sheshes, who holds the Beis Hillel was matir to be mashtin while he's holding on to his tefillin. Here the braisa says, Asarti l'cha kan. And the Gemara tries to reinterpret this braisa of Dvarim sheitarti l'cha kan, asarti l'cha kan, as referring to what's called tefach utfachaim, which has to do with the laws of tznius. When a person is using the facilities, what is he or she allowed to expose? How many tefachim? And according to Rashi, a man, because he has to expose his front, therefore is allowed to be megala, he could reveal tefachaim. Whereas a woman doesn't need that. You know, her heter is limited to the tefach. And if that be the case, then the subject is braisa of Dvarim sheitarti l'cha kan, meaning two tefachim that became mutter for a male, or sarti l'cha kan, are prohibited for a female. And if that be the case, then this braisa has nothing to do with the discussion about holding tefillin, going in, Beis HaKisei Kavua, Beis HaKisei Aroi, it's totally irrelevant. So now what we're up to is E Hachi, and that's what we want to start today, because this we didn't get a chance to finish yesterday. E Hachi, if you're telling me that the braisa, the subject of this braisa, Dvarim sheitarti l'cha, is Tefach Tfachayim of Ish V'Isha, Hodik Tani Ale, let's now read the Sefer of the braisa. Zeu Kalvachomer She'ein Alav Tshuva. In other words, we have a kasha with a logic of a kavachomer, and there's no rebuttal of this kavachomer, and that's the sefer of the braisa. So let's understand this. If the subject of this braisa is tefach tfachayim, the difference between a male and a female in terms of what they have to reveal and what they're allowed to reveal, my anal of tshuva. What is this absolutely waterproof kalvachomer that is going to upschlag, it's going to undermine the shita of the reisha of the braisa? The reisha means makom shasarti l'cha itarti, makom shasitarti l'cha sarti l'cha. If we're going to say that the subject of this braisa is tefach tfachayim, so then, what's the relevance of this kalvachomer that's meant to refute the logic of makom she'asarti l'cha hitarti l'cha? I mean, there's no reason why we shouldn't say that for a male let's start with the male. The male is hitarti l'cha, meaning tvachayim, and for the female, only a tefach is mutter. That makes absolute sense. There's no kalvachomer to undermine the logic of that distinction between the male and the female, tefach and tefachayim. But we can understand the logic of this braisa and the kalvachomer that's going to undermine this braisa, meaning the ratio of the braisa, if we assume that the subject of this braisa is holding on to tefillin in either A Beis HaKisei Kavua, or B, a Beis HaKisei Aroi. Now we can understand the kalvachomer, because if in a Beis HaKisei Kavua hitarti l'cha, and you're allowed to go there with tefillin holding on to your tefillin in your hand while you defecate in a Beis HaKisei Kavua, then how much more so it should be mutter in a Beis HaKisei Aroi, which means to be mashed in while you're holding on to your tefillin. Whereas again, let's just reiterate, if the Braisa is talking about Tefach Tochayim of Ish V'Isha, what Kal V'Chom is relevant here? Darka de Milsa Hachiyisa. In other words, the man has to be Megal Tochayim because of the front of his body, whereas the woman doesn't need to do so, and therefore she's enjoined from doing so. It's therefore logical that there should be a heter for a man and not for a woman. El Alav, therefore, by process of elimination, we have no choice but to assume that the subject of this Braisa is Tefillin, holding on to your Tefillin in a Beis Hakise. And now the Gemara, I mean to say the Sefer of Braisa has a real serious Kal V'Chomer objection, She'ein Olav Tshuva, to the logic of the Braisa. Why should the Braisa say in the Reisha that Mokom Shitarti Lucha Asarti Lucha? Why should it be Asur? If in a Beis Hakise Kavua it's Mutter, then how much more so in a Beis Hakise Aroi? And yet the Braisa is saying Asarti Lucha, which means that as far as urination in a Beis Hakise Aroi, because by definition, as we said before, urination is always a Beis Hakise Aroi, he urinates wherever he finds a place, is Tuvta de Rava, Omar Rav Sheshis. This now is an absolute refutation of Rava in the name of Rav Sheshis, because here the Braisa says clearly that Asarti Lucha, then in a basic Knesset Saroy of urination, I prohibited you from holding on to your tefillin. And this is a pircha which ain't a love tshuva. We don't know how to counter against this Braisa. Therefore, the Gemara concludes Tiuvta, that this is a pircha to Rav Sheshis, and for sure Beis Hillel would prohibit urination while he's holding on to his tefillin, or shall we say it the other way around, holding on to his tefillin while he's urinating. And this Braisa clearly indicates that Rav Sheshis' interpretation of Beis Hillel is incorrect. Again, we're going to have to face the music here, the logic. How is it that in a Beis HaKnesses HaRoy, Beis Hillel are going to prohibit holding on to your tefillin? That we'll get to very shortly. The Gemara now asks, Mikol Makom Kasha. So what do we do with this Kal V'Chomer? Hashta Beis Hakise Kavua Shari Beis Hakise Aroi Lo Kolshke. And the logic of this Kal V'Chomer is so compelling, we don't understand how we can possibly defend the Shita Beis Hillel reflected in this price, so that a Beis Hakise Aroi is also, it certainly should be Mutter. And now the Gemara adds an element here into the equation to try to justify why there should be a chumra in the case of urination of Beis Hakise Aroi that doesn't exist in the case of Gedolim of Beis Hakise Kavua Hachikomar. Beis Hakise Kavua Deleka Nitzotzos is therefore Shari. Beis Hakise Aroi Deika Nitzotzos Asri. So now we're discussing what's called Nitzotzos. Nitzotzos means the following. When a man is standing and urinating, then they're going to be nitzotzos. Means part of the urination will fall on his body, perhaps on his legs, and he has to therefore clean off the urine from his body. In the case of defecation, a man in his position sitting down, there's nothing flying in any direction. There are no fallout, if we could use that term. That's a good term. But in the case of urination, there's fallout. And now he's holding on to his tefillin. He's got the tzotzos on his reglayim. He certainly is going to want to clean himself up. And in doing so, he's going to possibly drop his tefillin or anyway, his hand is not free to watch the tefillin, protect them. And it's interesting here because Rashi elsewhere seems to indicate that if a person will leave nitzotzos on his legs, he would look like a krus shivcha. Krus shivcha has a certain physiological injury where the urine, instead of flowing out in what's called a kiluach, it goes rolls down his body. So certainly he doesn't want to look like a krus shivcha, because then there'll be motzi laz on his bonim that they are mamzerim. That's a discussion unto itself. And that's a sugyan yuma daf lamed with Rashi there. So he's preoccupied with cleaning off his nitzotzos. And therefore, if he's going to have to be meshafshef his nitzotzos, then he won't be able to do a proper shmira on his tefillin. Again, that's going to lead the Gemara to ask, so why is this called a Kal V'Chomer She'en oleh a tshuva. We now have a tshuva to the Kal V'chomer. You thought for sure, based on this logic, that we have to be mekil for sure in a Beis HaKnesses HaRoy, but in a Beis HaKnesses HaRoy, we have a problem that we didn't have in Gedolim in Beis HaKnesses Kavu, and that's the problem of Nitzotzos. So again, in the case of Gedolim in a Beis Knesses Kavua, in a Beis HaKisei Kavua, is Eino Ose Tzrochav Ela B'Yeshiva, V'ein Nitzotzos Nitotzim HaRaglov. Now, there's a kasha here, the Beis Yosef, in Archaim Siva Mem Gimel, which we want to mention, and he says the following, L'chora, when a person defecates, then, although there's no chashash that he'll be mekanech nitzotzos, but isn't there a chashash that he might be mekanech his tzoa, right? He's got tzoa in his anal area, he's got to clean that off for various reasons, if not the least of which is hygienic reasons, and he's holding on to his tefillin, how's he going to accomplish both? So the Beis Yosef answers that since they made a takana that he should hold on to his tefillin, then at that point there's an iser. He's not allowed to be mekanech his tzoa with his right hand, but only with his left hand. So he's going to hold on to his tefillin in his right hand while he's mekanech his tzoa in the left hand, and therefore there's no chashash. But in the case of the tzotzos, apparently he has to use both hands, and therefore there's a chashash. And the Shulchan Aruch writes, if a man is standing and he's mashtin al ofer tachuach, which means that the urine will be absorbed by the ofer, then there are no nitzotzos, and in such a case, it's mutter, he's allowed to do that and urinate even though he's holding on to his tefillin. The Gemara asks the question that we mentioned early, Hachi, if this be the case, amai enal of tshuva, why do you say that this Kal V'chomer is absolutely convincing? We really have a logical distinction between Beis HaKisei Kavua, which means Tzoa, as opposed to Beis HaKisei Aroi, which means Lahashtin Hachikam. This is what the Tana meant in the Sefer the Braisa. Ha Milsa, this din regarding tefillin in a Beis HaKisei, distinguishing between Beis HaKisei Kavua and Beis HaKisei Aroi, Teisei La B'Toras Taima. We should learn it and carry the ball with it based on logic and svara, tam usvara, and therefore we should be matir in the case of kavua where there's no nitzotzos, but in the case of aroy we should be prohibitive because yesh la nitzotzos. Velo tesi la the kal v'chomer. This is what the braisa means. Don't use the kal v'chomer over here, which means there's a certain rigid set of rules and regulations that govern Kal V'chomer, which means that Aroi and Kavua, whatever you are matir in Kavua, certainly you're matir in Aroi. The Asya Lo B'Toras Kal V'chomer, if you're going to derive the conclusions about Beis HaKisei Aroi based on a strict Kal V'chomer, if you're not going to use Tam and Svara, then you're going to come to the conclusion that certainly a Beis HaKnesses, which is more chomer, is yet mutter. You're allowed to hold your tefillin in your hand, and certainly in a Beis HaKnesses Aroi, which is certainly lakula, you would be allowed to hold your tefillin. And so Kal V'chomer Sheino Lav Tshuva, which means that in Hilchas Kal V'chomer, B'Toras Kal V'chomer, we would not be able to upschlag and reject the logic of the Kal V'chomer. And therefore, you're not allowing me to explain our minug, which is just the opposite of the logic of the Kal V'chomer. We're daf going to be machmir, and we're going to oser Beis HaKisei Aroi, because on the Kal V'chomer per se, there's no pircha. We never found that a Beis HaKnesses Aroi is more chomer than a Beis HaKnesses Kavua, and therefore we don't have any halacha that would be doche the Kal V'chomer, but we do have tam usvara. And based on tam usvara, which would justify our minhag, we can say that there's more reason to be machmir in the case of Beis HaKisei Aroi because of nitzotzos. And therefore we're going to go with that tam, with that logic. So if this be the case, then based on the final conclusion of the Braisa, we really have Rav Sheshes, so to speak, in a bind. And again, this this minhag that we spoke about, then in a Beis Akisi Aroi, there's nitotzim hanitzotzos, there's urine that's flowing down, drops of urine. That's what we call a davar sheyesh lo tam. And that has no relationship to the Kal V'Chomer. Kal V'Chomer works with mechanical rules and regulations and principles. So therefore, if in Kal V'Chomer we have no right, so to speak, to be more machmir in a Beis Akisi Aroi than we would be in a Beis Akisi Kavua, and therefore we have no pircha on the Kal V'Chomer, but nevertheless we have what's called the Derech Taima, Torah's Taima U Svara. Now, the Lechora, the Pnei Yeshua says there's a question here that we could raise on this Gemara. We always apply the rule of Kal V'Chomer, and we reject the Kal V'Chomer based on a pircha. And a pircha tells me that if we find a kula in that which is more chomer, then that upslugs the whole Kal V'Chomer. So here we have a pircha, because you're saying that Beis Akisei certainly should be more kal, based on the fact that in general we're more mekil in a Beis Akisei Aroi, but nevertheless we do have a pircha, and that is this reasoning, this tam, that there are nitzotzos in a Beis Akisei Aroi. That should be enough for a pircha on the Kal V'Chomer, to show us that the kal is really more chomer than what we thought was the chomer. Meaning, we thought the kavur was the chomer, but in effect, we have a logical, compelling reason to say that dafka what we called kal, which means aroi, is more chomer. And the Pnei Yeshua offers an explanation of this Gemara, and he says that what the Gemara wants to explain here is that if we find elsewhere that aroi is more chomer min kavua, if we have such a din, then that would upschlag, that would be a valid pircha on the Kal V'Chomer, and we would say that the din that was formulated in Beis Akisi Aroi, that you're not allowed to enter into or urinate with the tefillin biyado, would apply as a general rule, even in a place where there is no chashash of nitzotzos, and in a Beis Akisi Kavua, there would be a heter. So just trying to summarize the interpretation of this Gemara based on the Pnei Yeshua, there are two ways of learning, says the Pnei Yeshua. There's the Kal V'Chomer way, and then there's the Tamu Svara way. If we would operate within the framework of Kal V'Chomer, then what would happen is that if we found a pircha to the Kal V'Chomer, then the conclusion that we would come to is that the din of Beis Akisei Aroi Asur would be an absolute din that would apply in all cases, even if lu yitzur you had a situation where there was no chashash of nitzotzos, and the din lekula of Beis Akisei, that it's mutter, would also always apply, and it's always mutter, even if there would be a problem of, like we spoke about before, being mekaneach. But since we did not find a pircha for the Kal V'Chomer, because we don't have any din which was formulated in terms of the Chacham allowing you to be mekil in the case of Beis Akisei Aroi, therefore we go back to the Kal V'Chomer. And if we go back to the Kal V'Chomer, then we look at the logic of the Chomer, the Gorem HaChumra, in contrast to the logic of the Gorem HaKula, and then we can make distinctions, and we can come to the conclusion that the only reason for the chumra of Beis Akisei Aroi is because of nitzotzos, and therefore lu yitzur, if in a Beis Akisei Aroi there would be no chashash of nitzotzos, it could be mutter. Of course, the gorem ha'iser is the nitzotzos. In the flip side, we would say that in a Beis Akisei Kavua, if lu yitzur, he would be standing up in such a way that there would be a problem, or kinuach, as we said, of tzoa, then in that case it would be osur to go into the Beis Akisei Kavua holding his tefillin biyad. And all that would be based on Kal V'Chomer. If on the other hand we had a pircha to the Kal V'Chomer, then we would have to take these two dinim as absolute. One din is that in Beis Akisei it's Kavua, it's osur, and in Beis Akisei Aroi, it's mut. Tana Rabbanan. Now we're going to discuss what's called a gnai to go into a suda in a case where you might need to use the bathroom and defecate in the middle of the suda. In other words, when a person walks around, the assumption is that which he has in his, let's call it the large intestines, is going to press down and he's going to have to use the bathroom. Tana Rabbana rotsa likanes l'sudas keva. So if a man wants to go into a suda, and it'll be a gnai, as we said, if he's going to have to use the bathroom and defecate in the middle of the suda, therefore what should he do? Before he sits down for the suda begins, it mahalich asor pom arba amos arba amos or arba pom him eser amos. Either he should take 10 short walks of 4 amos each, totaling 40 amos, or alternatively, he should walk around 4 times, but each time he should take 10 amos, again calculating the same 40 amos. And after he finishes this, or perhaps after each one of the walks, he should be bodik himself, ask, you know, try to feel his body and see if he can defecate. And that's what he should do, because the walking around is going to cause him to have to defecate. It's like a pregnant woman who walks around in order to shorten the labor period so she'll give birth. And here too, he should do this walking, and hopefully he'll be bodhic himself, he'll use the bathroom before he sits down to the suda, and he'll avoid the gnai. That's called yipona. He'll have to go to the bathroom, v'yakach nichnas, and only then will he go into the suda. This is what we call hilchas derech eretz. The Gemara now clarifies the din of tefillin with regard to suuda, the shah suuda. Omar Rabbi Yitzchak ha-nichnas l'sudas keva is choletz tefillah. A person, if he's eating a short meal, a snack, what's called achilas haroi, which is, let's say, a kibetza, as opposed to a full suda, then he doesn't have to take off his tefillin. And if you want to know exactly what the definition of achilas haroi is, as we said, a kibetza, then you have to learn a sugya in Masechta Sukkah, which addresses the question, what are you allowed to eat outside the sukkah? What are you prohibited from eating outside the sukkah? However, if he's going into a sudas keva, he's eating a real meal, I mean, more than a kibetza, then choletz tefillah, he has to take off his tefillah, because we're afraid that during a suda, they used to drink wine at every suda, then he might get a little bit drunk, a little bit tipsy, and that is something that undermines the kedushas tefillin. The Rambam compares kedushas tefillin to kedushas tzitz, like the Kohen Gadol wore in his fire at tzitz, which meant that the Shem Hashem was with him. And we wear the tefillin, which has the tefillin shel rosh itself has 21 shemas in it, so we have to be very careful about kedushas tefillin without any hesech hadas, and certainly not to be in a state of drunkenness. Diyomer Rabbi Chiyo, we have a statement of Rabbi Chiyo about being cholitz your tefillin before the suda. Me nichon al shulchano, he should take off his tefillin, put it on the table while he's eating the meal. Vechein hadrlo. That's what hadur. Hadur means ra'ui. Hadur is, this is the proper way to act in terms of being shomer kedushas tefillin. And the reason why he wants to put the tefillin on his table is so that as soon as he finishes his meal, immediately he will redon his tefillin. And this is also reflective of the original minog that they wore tefillin 24/7. I'm exaggerating because Lila loves my tefillin. In any event, this statement of Rabbi Chiya contradicts the statement that we brought earlier of Rabbi Yitzchak, because according to Rabbi Yitzchak, you do not put your tefillin on the shulchan during the suda, but rather you should be choletz them before you enter into the suda. And we'll try to see if we can come up with some sort of explanation for this machlokes. But in any event, let's just finish the sugya. The Gemara says, Yad Emas, until what point is he allowed to leave his tefillin on the table? In other words, at what point should he have to re-don his tefillin? Amar Nachman bar Yitzchak ad zman brocha. In other words, up until Birkas HaMazon, meaning before he recites Birkas HaMazon, he should wash his hands and he should put his tefillin back on. And he should be mevarech birkas hamazon while he's wearing his tefillin. That's how the Rambam says it in Hilchas Tefillin, Perek Dalet. Now, even though, as a general rule, we're not mafsik between Etilas Yadayim and Birkas HaMazon, but in this case, because of the Chibas HaMitzvah of Tefillin, this is not a hefsek. Now, to try to explain why Rabbi Yitzchak insists that even before he enters into the Suda, in a case of Sudas Keva, he should take off his tefillin, not bring him into the Suda and place the tefillin on the table, it's perhaps based on the fact that if he's, and that's the chashash, he might get drunk a little bit, so the tefillin on his table are in a very precarious situation. Even if he's holding his tefillin, he might drop them. So therefore, it's better if he doesn't take the risk of putting the tefillin on the table in close proximity, as if he's holding on to the tefillin, they might fall because of his state of drunkenness. But Rabbi Chiya is not worried about this because he's more concerned about the mitzvah and the chibah of tefillin, that he should immediately put his tefillin on the first moment opportunity when he finishes his suda, after he washes his hands and completes his suda, and then and only then he puts on his tefillin. Now, it's very interesting that in this sugya, Netilas Yadayim for suda, which we call Mayim Achronim, is the critical moment of ending the Seuda, which means if he would want to now change his mind and eat something, he would have to make a new bracha. It might have implications as far as Leil HaSeder is concerned. Perhaps it would have implications in Hilchas Basar B'Cholov, if he wants to set up two different Sudos, one for Milchiks and then following with Fleishiks, etc., etc. Now the Gemara continues with regard to the concept of Kavod HaTefillin, Shmiras HaTefillin, and the Gemara is going to ask a question of a stira between two brises. Tani Chada, one brisa says, Tzorer Adam Tefillin, Tfilov, Im Ma'osav Be'afarkes Suso. In other words, he has a certain sudar, as we call it, a certain kerchief, which he usually wears as a turban around on his head. And now he's allowed to use that as a temporary tick, so to speak. We call it a zekel for his tefillin, and use it in a temporary way that would allow him to tie up his mo'os, his money, to get... Normally, we would not allow putting mo'os together with tefillin, and that would be undermining what's called Tashmishei Kedusha, which Belinetta will speak about a little bit later. But Tanya Edith, the other brisa, says Lo Yatsur, a person should never wrap up his tefillin together with mo'os, that would undermine the Kedusha of Tashmishei Kedusha. Lo Kasha, Hub the Azmane, Vehub the Lo Azmane. So we have a principle called Hasmona Lav Milsahi, but here the Gemara assumes that Hasmona Milsahi, meaning if he designates this turban exclusively for wrapping up his tefillin, it becomes what we call a tefillin zekel, then it takes on the status of Tashmishei Kedusha as a result of his Hasmona's designation, and it's called Huktzah L'Mitzvaso. And in such a case, the Braisa says, Lo Yatzur Adam Tfilav Ima'osav. He shouldn't tie it together with his mos. But the Braisa that says you're allowed to be Lo Azmane means he did not designate it for tefillin. He's only using it on a temporary basis. And there's no Azmana. And therefore, he's allowed to put his tefillin together with his mos in that temporary Sudar. The Omer of Chizda, Hai Sudara, the tefillin, the azmane lemeitzar base bay tefillin, a sudar which has been designated as a zekel, and he's going to use it exclusively to wrap up his tefillin, is tsar bay tefillin. He will use it for tefillin and only for tefillin. The osel lemeitzar bay pshita. He's not allowed to put any other dvarim shel chol inside the chulin. That's called pshita, dvarim shel chol. But azmane velot sarbe, but in fact, if he hasn't used it, this is based on the principle called azmana lav milsa, that's how we paskin, and we'll talk about that in Mitzchem later, so that even though he did designate it, there was a azmana, but nevertheless, he has never used it on one single occasion for his tefillin, his tsarbe velo azmane, in such a case, then he could be tsarist tefillin, and Shari Lemeitzer Bezuzah is allowed to put the Zuzim together with this Sudar, which has never ever been actually used, even on one single occasion, for Tefillin. So in other words, Rav Chisda is based on the principle as Manalav Milsa, which is something that we see, let's say, in Masecht Nedarim. The Gemara talks about Hasmana Milsa in the case of a Beis HaKise, you know, you've designated, but you've never actually used it. So it means that even though he was maktiv this thing for tefillin, but nevertheless, hazman alav milsa, he hasn't used it even once, and therefore doesn't have the status of huktza l'mitzvaso, because hazman alav milsa. And therefore, if he wants to use the sudar now, b'derech haroi, he's allowed to be tzorer his tefillin in the, dvarim shalchol together with his tefillin in the sudar. Now, at the beginning of the Braisa, it says Pshite. At the end, it says Mos. And there's a Chiddush here that if he designates something for Tefillin, and he used it already on one occasion for his Tefillin, he's not allowed to put into the Tefillin Afilu Pshite, which are Prutos, Sheminiach Sham Luzman Katzar. These are small coins, cheap coins, which he'll only leave there for a short period of time. He's constantly using them. But if he was miyachid, but he hasn't yet used it, he's allowed to use it even for mos, which are zuzim chashuvim, and they'll be there on a long-term basis. Now the Gemara brings the shita of Abaye. Ule Abaye, diomar azmona milsehi. Abaye, in general, with regard to many different dinim, holds that azmona milsehi. So, for example, in Tachrichim, if you would designate certain begadim for the mess, then it would already be osur ba'anah, as if it was used for the mess. And therefore, his machshav is enough to set up a tashmishei kedusha of huktza l'mitzvaso. And this would have relevance, for example, on sukkos. If you're talking about a case of schach, and it hasn't yet been used as schach for any mitzvah, for even one occasion of sitting under the schach on sukkos, but nevertheless he designated it, it might have a din of huktza l'mitzvaso. And this is all a discussion about, based on a sugya in sukkah and other places in Shas, a pasuk that says Vatamas Sham Miriam Vatikover Sham. And the Gemara records that according to Rava, we have a Gezeirah Shavah Sham Sham from Avodah Zorah, where it says, Asher Avdu Sham HaGoyim. And just like in Avodah Zorah, Hazmona is not enough if you designate something for idol worship, but he hasn't yet worshipped it. So too, the Yisra Anah of Mess, in the case of Tachrichim, is there's no Chalos Hazmona. But Abai holds that there's a Gezeirah Shavah from Egla Rufa. In Egla Rufa, it says, V'arfu Sham. And just like in Egla Rufa, even if he's mocked to the Egla for the mitzvah of Yerida L'Nachal, then that is enough to generate an Isar Anah, as the Gemara establishes in Krisus Chafei. And so too in Big Day Ames, once you designate it, it becomes Osir Banah. So therefore, Afal Gavdalo Tzarbe, he has never yet wrapped his tefillin in the Sudar Tzarbe, then it's already Osir Tzarbe, I Azmine Osir, Eloas Menelo, which is interesting that the flip side here of Abaye, although he was machbir because Hazmana Milsa, even though he's never used this sudar to wrap it up, to wrap up his tefillin in. But now we have another case, a case with Tsarbe, and here, even though he's used it on one single occasion, Abaye points out that that's not called Tashmishei Kedusha, that's not called Huktza L'mitzvah, and the reason for that is Iazmine Osir Lo Azmine Lo. He has no problem being Tzor Ismos if he didn't designate it. So the Shimush alone is not enough without Azmana to designate it and give it the status of Tashmishei Kedusha with an Isa Litzor Ma'osav. The use itself is not enough. On the other hand, and you need Azmona, on the other hand, Azmona per se is enough, according to Abaye, to generate this Isur of Kedushas, Tashmishei Kedusha. Now, Hazmona, keep in mind, means that he designates it for exclusive use for tefillin, for all posterity. It's not something that on a temporary basis he designates it for the use with as a tikshel tefillin. So therefore, in a case where he designates it liolam, then this would be and even if he only used it once, that's enough according to everybody to generate the Iser of Tashmishei Kedusha, according to Abaye, even if he hadn't used it even one single time, that would still be an Iser be Tashmishei Kedusha by virtue of Hazmana Milsa. If we paskin like Rava, that Hazmana Lav Milsa, which is also Rav Chizda's Shita in that sugya, then if he uses it once, we don't know if that's enough or not. We know that Hazmana without using it once is certainly not enough to engender the din of Huktzel Mitzvasa. Beis Yosef and Archaim Simon Membeis Siv Gimel, based on the Mordechai at the end of Megillah, says that in a case where he used it once and he intended to use it over and over again, but he didn't make a formal hazmana. So here's the case. Is tsara bo pam achas al menas lish tamish bo l'shem kach li olam? If he used this sudar on one occasion and his intention was that he's going to use it constantly and designate this sudar exclusively for tefillin, then even though he didn't have hazmana, then the usage itself becomes hazmana, because his intention was to use it on a permanent, eternal basis, and therefore it's like a hazmana. But in a case where he used it and his intention was only to use it on a one-time basis, then even if he had a hazmana, but it doesn't matter, because hazmana lav milsa, that's how we paskin. The Gemara now continues this topic, this theme of Kedushas Tefillin. Bar Minei Rav Yosef Bereid Rav Nechunya Mi Rav Yehuda. The question was the following: Maushi Aniach Odom Tefilov Tachas Mi Rashosav. Is it insulting to the honor, the dignity of the Tefillin, if at night when he sleeps he puts the Tefillin under his head, under his pillow? And now Rav Yosef explains the two tzadim of his shaila. He says, Tachas Margil Yosef Lo Kamin Boil. If he puts his tefillin under his feet, that for sure would undermine the covenant of the tefillin. Because Noeg Bahen Minag Bizoyan. But Ki Kamin Boil, what's my shaila? What's my suffix? Tachas Mir Yosef under his head. The head itself is the highest and most elevated point in a person's body. That's where the neshama is located. Is my, what's the din? Amalei, Rav Yosef responds to Rav Yehuda, responds to Rav Yosef, Hachi Amar Shmuel Mutar. You're allowed to put your tefillin under your head. Ve'afilu ishto imo. Now we can have a long discussion about what this afilu ishto imo means. In many cases, like for example, in ishto imo, is he allowed to recite Kriyat Shema and so forth? But right now, as far as where he puts his tefillin, he's allowed to put his tefillin under his head, even if his wife is with him in the same bed, and that's not called a bizayon. And the Gemara now objects to the kula, the leniency of Shmuel, based on a brisa with regard to the case of ishto imo. What does it say, Meisvei, in the Braisa? It says, Lo yadiach odom tfilov tachas margil yosov, mibnei shenoge behem derech bizoyam, avol miniach tachas marashosov, but imim hoya ishto imo osur. So that although in two out of three of the cases the Braisa does reflect the psak halach that we've been insisting on until now, that although it's also to put his tefillin under his feet, he's permitted to put it under his head, but that's only, and here's where we deviate from Shmuel, if ain't ishto imo, but if ishto imo, then it's improper. Now, the Shulchan Aruch seems to assume in Siman Mem that ishto imo means he has full intention of having an intimate relationship with his wife. If he doesn't, then that's called ain ishto imo. So we're talking about a case where the tefillin are under his pillow and he's going to have a sexual relationship with his wife. In such a case, the Braisa says it's also. However, the Braisa continues, Hayamakom Shegavoa Shlosha Tefachim. Now we're talking about a case where there's something that's above his head. What does it mean, above his head on a makom gavoa? It means a minimum of Shlosha Tefachim. Onamuch Shlosha Tefachim. Let's say, for example, there's what we call a shelf, a madaf, that's above his head three tefachim. Or let's say, in a case where he goes out of his bed, he has a madaf that is three tefachim, a shelf that's three tefachim below his head, mutter. In all these cases, it's mutter, even if it's ishto ima, because under those circumstances, we don't consider that the tefillin are with him while he's engaging in tashmish amita with his wife, and therefore the kedusha of tefillin is properly preserved. But in any event, in the case of ishto ima, tiyuvta de Shmuel tiyuvta. And this is a very strange Gemara, because tiyuvta, double tiyuvta, always means that's a pircha, and we reject the previous halacha. And yet, look at the next line of the Gemara. Omar Rav afal gav desanya tiyuvta deshmuel hilchasa kavase. Even though the Braisa clearly, explicitly contradicts Shmuel, and in the case of ishto imo, it's also to put his tefillin under his head, but nevertheless, we pass him like Shmuel, and it's mutter. My timer. What's the reason for this halachic leniency? And now we turn to Daf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. Kol linatirinu tfei odif. In other words, if he's going to be very careful about the kedushas tefillin, that's better. That's a superior situation. So let's focus for a moment on this concept of lanatirinu, which means shmiras atfilin. Shmiras atfilin is not a reference to bizoyin or to kavod or to tashmish shamita and the whole lot, but rather it's a reference to protecting the tefillin from gadnovim, from thieves, from akborim, from little creatures that might attack his tefillin. And if he takes his tefillin and he puts it on the side, and he doesn't put it on the Vereshosov, even though on one hand that it, because he's with the ishto, even on that is more of a covered for his tefillin, in terms of not being with him in bed with his wife, but on the other hand, it exposes his tefillin to the lack of shmirah, as we described, because of ganovin and akborim. So in the trade-off, says Rava, it's better to be careful about shmirah satfilin l'turinu, so the tefillin shouldn't get ruined, than about the possibility of bizoyin atfilin. And therefore, Rava is so compelled by this logic that he paskins that Shmira is adifa, is more important than kavod atfilin in terms of the lack of a tznius dekamaisa in the presence of the tefillin. And Rabbeinu Yonah explains that Shmuel rejects the Braisa, and even though we never or rarely find that an Amora could reject a Braisa, but nevertheless, in something that's dikduke mitzvah, like in this case of Shmiras HaTfilin, we can paskin like an Amora against a Braisa. The Pnei Yoshua insists Lishitoso that an Amora could never argue with a Braisa, and Shmuel would claim that he can reconcile his Kula with the Braisa itself. And apparently, based on another Braisa, which we once touched upon, that the original Takana was that we should be Mekayim Shmiras HaTfilin in Chorei HaKosu B'Shus HaRabim, and therefore never not bring it into the Beis HaKisei. And that's because of the Bizoyon to bring it into the Beis HaKisei, so that we see that Shmiras HaTfilin is more important than Bizoyin and Kavod HaTfilin. Shmiras HaTfilin is paramount. And therefore, Shmuel thinks that we'll have to reconcile this with the Braisa. And the Pnei Yeshua goes a great length to reconcile it with Braisa. But the Chiddush of the Pnei Yeshua against Rabbeinu Yonah is that since we have an earlier Braisa, which clearly puts Shmiras HaTfilin on top of the agenda, and that's primary, even at a loss of Kavod HaTfilin, and even at a Bizoyin HaTfilin, to take the Tfilin into a Beis HaKisei as a Bizoyin, but we'd prefer Shmiras HaTfilin, and that's paramount. Therefore, instead of worrying about Bizoyin HaTfilin, we have to worry primarily about Shmiras HaTfilin. The Gemara now addresses the question of putting tefillin under his head. Where exactly does he put it? Hecha manach lehu. Where does he place his tefillin when it's underneath his head? Omer Rav Yirmiya. Rav Yirmiya says, Bein kar lekeses shelo keneged rosho. In other words, he shouldn't put it exactly under his head, but rather bein kar lekeses. There should be some sort of a hefsek. A kar is something on which he sleeps. We could call it perhaps a pillow, And a keses is something that he puts under the pillow. In any event, he should have this both kar and keses, and that is going to separate it. And that's what Rabbi Yirmiyah says, to separate the tefillin from his head. Shelo yeh keneged rosho. In other words, it should be a little bit on the side. Like, let's say, for example, his head is located here, and the tefillin will be not directly below his head, not keneged rosho, but rather mitachas l'rosho. It's underneath his head, but it's near his head, because the kar and the ksus sort of extend beyond his head, and there's a place for the tefillin to the right or to the left of his head. Bar Tanura elsewhere in Mikvos, and there's a Tosin of Avodah Zarah, seems to agree with the same approach, is that the kar is the sheet on which he sleeps, and the keses is the pillow on which he places his head. In any event, if he puts the tefillin between the pillow and the sheet, and it's not keneged rosho, that's already mafkia any sort of derech bizayon. If he puts it directly under his head, min rabbanan, it's considered derech bizayon that his head is on the tefillin. Again, that's best in terms of shmiras ha-tefillin if he has no other option. But if he has the option, then in an ideal situation, heichan manachle is ben kar lekeses, and there it's not keneged rosho. And this problem of keneged rosho as a bit of a bizayon in the tefillin would apply even if ein ishto imo. The Gemara now has a kasha on this presentation of Rabbi Yirmiyah, and the Gemara says the following. I'm sorry, the Gemara raises the question not against Rabbi Yirmiyah, but to Rabbi Yirmiyah. For Tani, we have a brisa of Rabbi Chiya. Meinichon bekova. Now, as you put the tefillin into what we call a zekel, in Hebrew it's called an artik, tachas mirashosov, and he puts it against his head, immediately below his head. Mamish kenegdo. And we'll see that Tos has a problem with this on the top of the omud, dibra masul v'ha. But in any event, it's tachas mirashosov. And this is a question, because we just finished saying that it shouldn't be keneged rosho, if all possible, but rather it should be not tachas mirashosov, but Rabbi Yirmiyah said it should be ben kar lekeses. So this is a question that was addressed to Rabbi Yirmiyah. And the Gemara answers that which Rabbi Chiya says here in this brisa, menichon bekova, tachas mirashosov, that's a case of demapikle lemorsha dekova lebar. In other words, the tefillin protrude a little bit outwards. There's a kind of a blita, and it protrudes outwards, so that the tefillin are, even though they are under his mirashosav in one sense, but it's an inartic in a way that it's outside of keneged mirashosav. It's on that part which is not mamish keneged mirashosav. So it's a part of the zekel, the kiss, the nartik shel tefillin, that, no, there's two segments. There's one part that's immediately under his head, and then there's a part that he can push the tefillin over to the side, which is not keneged rosho. It's not mamish tachas rosho. It's a little bit outside of tachas rosho, and that would be that would reconcile us with Rabbi Yirmiyah. The Gemara now tells us the following stories. Bar Kapora Tzir Lehu Bechilsa. He would tie up his tefillin in what's called a yeria, which was around his bed. Now, what that means is a kila, like the old-time beds, is something that is a canopy, and it goes around the bed, and Bar Kapora would tie his tefillin on that part of the bed, on the outside of the canopy. Umapik lemar shehon lebar. And part of the area that this tent, so to speak, that covered his bed, where he tied up his tefillin, because that part was a little bit bolet, it was, protruded, klape chutz, it wasn't directly under the mita. So you have like a tent that extends beyond the circumference of the, or the rectangular shape of the mita itself. And there, he would certainly solve any problem that the tefillin would not be neither keneged ragleim or keneged rasheim and so forth. Rav Shisha, Bereid Rav Idi, another story, Manach Lahu, where did he put his tefillin? Ashar Shifa. Shar Shifa is a small bench which sat in front of his bed. We call it a safsal in Hebrew. And it was not underneath his feet, and therefore it's called a sharshaf in both Hebrew and in Aramaic. Uparis sudra iluya. And in addition to that, he tied extended a turban on top of his tefillin. So it means that he had three different elements here that allowed for kedushas kavodat tefillin. Number one, it was not keneged margiliosov or merashosov. It was on this bench, outside of the parameters of the bed. Number two, it was in a kiss. It was in its nartik, what we call a zekel. And number three, he would even cover over the tefillin with a turban. And that is what we call in halach, if you've ever heard the phrase, kli betoch kli. And that's the ultimate ideal shmiras ha-tefillin and kedushas ha-tefillin. The Gemara brings another mice about tefillin, tachas merashosav. Omar Rav Hamnuna Bereid Rav Yosef, zimne chada haviko imna kami de Rava. I was standing in front of Rava, says Rav Hamnuna, vi Omar lini, told me, zil isli, please bring me my tefillin. Vyashkechetinu, and where did he find the tefillin? He found it in his bed, meaning the bed of Rava. And where was it located exactly? Bein karal keses shelo keneged rosho, which is exactly what we saw in Rav Yirmiya. Bein karal keses shelo keneged rosho. Vahaviyadana, and as a result of Hamnun, I understood that the Yom Tvila Havi, that this was the day of Tvila, in other words, when his wife went to the mikvah, and therefore Rava would be Meshamish his mita, he would have intimate relations that night, and therefore Rava went out of his way to put the tefillin in a very, very safe place. Now, why would Rava instruct his Talmud Rav Hamnuna to bring his tefillin? And guess what? Rav Hamnuna would figure out, would calculate that on that night, Rava had an intimate relationship with his wife. I mean, that's something that should be kept very secret. And the answer is, says the Gemara, Lagmuron halacha lemaisa hu diavid. The reason he sent me to bring the tefillin is he wanted me to figure out halacha lemaisa. I would see the way he was noeg, and that minug would reflect what we saw earlier in Shmuel, what we saw in Rabbi Yirmiya, to teach us a dvar halacha lemaisa, that a person should place his tefillin tachas mirashosov, afilu ishto imo, again, not directly tachas mirashosov, but bein kar lekeses, and that's the way a person should be knowing. We see here clearly, and again, it's something that's hard for us in our culture to begin to comprehend, that when it comes to teaching a halacha lemaisa to a student, we're not interested in tznius right now. In other words, we see it not as an issue of tznius, but rather as an issue of halacha lemaisa. There is a long discussion here amongst the Mefarshim, starting with Rabbeinu Yonah and Beis Yosef afterwards, about exactly how the Talmud Rav Hamnuna figured out that Rava was Meshamish Mitaso and it was Yom Tefillah. There's one approach that says that Rava was public about his own tefillah, meaning that he was a balkeri as a result of the fact that he had relations with his wife, and therefore he had to go to mikvah. So it wasn't that this Talmud figured out that Rava's wife had gone to the mikvah, but rather that Rava had gone to the mikvah. Also, it says a yom tefillah. Now, a woman doesn't go to mikvah by day, and if it was a case of tefillah ishto nida, then the language should have been Leil Tefillah, because Tevilah is only Balayla. But if it's Tevilas Balkeri, then Balkeri would be Tovil Baboker, the next day after he became a Balkeri. And there's a very interesting comment here of the Maritz Chayos. He says that Kol Mokum Sha'omer HaRav L'Talmid of Halacha B'derech Limud, whenever a Rav tells his Talmid HaLacha B'derech Limud, then you don't know whether he means it Halacha L'Maisa or not. And that's a Sugyan Bava Basra Daf Kuf Lamed, that Ein L'Maidim HaLacha L'Maisa, in other words, we don't learn how to be Noeg Halacha L'Maisa just from a statement of our Rebbe. Unless he says these words, but here that he showed him that he was Noi Kishmuel, therefore he knew that it was Halacha L'maisa. Now when we say Halacha L'maisa Kishmuel, we have to qualify that it's Shmuel according to Rabbi Yirmiyah's interpretation of Shmuel, because Rabbi Nuna found Rav's tefillin, which was Bein Kar L'Keses Shelo Keneged Rosho. And if we go back to Shmuel, the language of Shmuel was, let's see it again, Amar Lei, Hachi Amar Shmuel Mutar, he's allowed to put it Tachas Mar Shosav, Afilu Ishto Imo. But we're going to have to qualify Shmuel with the added interpretation of Rabbi Yirmiyah. And again, Rabbi Yirmiyah was trying to reconcile Shmuel with the Braisa, and therefore he says, Bein Kar L'Keses Shelo Keneged Rosho. So it's not that the tefillin were exactly Keneged Rosho, because if you look at the language of our Gemara, the Gemara says, Ashkechitinu Bein Kar L'Keses Shelo Keneged Rosho, which again would be Rabbi Yirmiyah's qualification of Shmuel, that we don't put the tefillin directly under the rush, but rather we have a little bit of a part that's bolate beyond the rush, and he puts it between Kar and Keses. Okay, then the next Gemara, which Amritsim will see in the next year, deals with the case of someone sleeping in a bed with his wife or somebody else. Is he allowed to recite Kriyat Shmuel?